Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And people who are online, is it started already? Okay. So I'm Naomi Nichols. Reverend is in front of my name, but I like Naomi. Just so you know, let's see, Adriana, move over a little bit. I need to make sure I see Pastor Barbara. Did you know that on this very day, in the morning service, on Easter in 2019, you ordained me? That's why this is a special day for me, too. You'll see our fruits. So I'm a 72-year-old. I live in Cape May, New Jersey, which is at the very point of New Jersey. Takes me 5 minutes to get on the ferry, 45 minutes to come here. I stay at the Best Western. I accrue points, and sometimes I get a whole weekend free. I've been coming once a month, but now I'm going to try twice a month. I was born into a Christian family, and I thought I was getting something wrong. Oh, I forgot to put the light on. Thank you. I was born into a Christian family. It was a strict Baptist family. Anybody here from a Baptist home? Well, I'll tell you. You couldn't play cards because they're devil cards. You couldn't dance, even if you were arm's length, because it would cause friction and get sexually aroused. I don't know how you do that, but now the dances are very dirty. So anyway, because I was born into a Christian home, I automatically thought that I was a Christian. And so several years, you know, I thought I was a Christian. My mom and dad would argue before we go to church. In church, they'd act like angels, and then they'd argue on the way home, and sometimes that's how it was. I was always in Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. If there was a special week thing, I was there. If there was a camp meeting, my bags were packed, and I was on the bus with my two sisters. But to tell you the truth, I became born again when I was 31 years old. I went into the Air Force. And several times I'm going to mention a Kodak moment. That's when you think of something, you can see actually where you were, what happened. And when you're born again and you ask Jesus into your heart, for most people, they remember exactly when it happened. Some people have, you know, they've almost lost their life, and then they ask Christ into their heart. Sometimes nothing happens. I remember Pastor Barbara had a friend who was always rowdy, and one day she became real nice, and Pastor Barbara said, "I want what you have." And the girl took her to church, and Pastor Barbara asked the Lord into her heart. And so that was a Kodak moment for me. I went in the Air Force when I was in 1978. I was 28 years old, and I was there for 20 years. And I always struggled with my weight. Before I went in the Air Force, I used to always take Synthroid. I had a thyroid problem. But then when I got in the Air Force, for some reason, they didn't pick it up. So I always had a weight problem. And the service does not cut you a break. If you're caught with drugs and alcohol, they have to put you through rehab, and then they'll discharge you dishonorably. Or if you have a weight problem, you're on the weight program. They used to call it the Porky Pig program. But I went to the gym every night. I worked in the emergency room, and all my days, all my nights off, I worked pretty much permanent nights. So when my nights were off, then I would go to the gym. I would keep my regular schedule. And this one night I went to the gym and I worked out, got in the sauna. I was all sweaty, got in the shower, and the locker room was filled with people. All the girls were in there. And when I shut the shower off, all of a sudden there was nobody in there. And I'm going, hello? Hello? And there was nobody there. And so I stepped out of the shower. And at that moment, someone grabbed me from behind and held me real tight. I kicked him in the balls, but I tripped over the long bench that goes in front of lockers. I was stabbed. I was raped. And another guy came in, another black guy. He came in the door. And I was saying, please, can you help me? Can you help me? And he started coming over to me and he said, honey, I'll help you. And he pulled his zipper down. And so he did oral sex and there was a knife between my legs so that I wouldn't do anything. And then they switched. And when I left, when they were done, I have a scar here from the stab. When I was done, they threatened, don't you dare tell anybody what happened because we know where you work. And if we find out you told somebody, we'll be waiting for you one night. And at that point, you know, I had to keep all that in as a secret. And if people asked me, are you doing okay? I'd say, yeah, I'm doing okay. But I couldn't let the secret out. My whole behavior changed. You know, first of all, you go through this. Maybe it was my fault, but it wasn't my fault. And I changed my behavior drastically. I didn't go to church. I mean, where was God? He certainly wasn't there for me. He must have been taking care of somebody else because he didn't protect me. And that's what my thought was for several years. I didn't go to church. I didn't go with my Christian friends. I didn't go with the peers that I work with. We always would go out and 8 in the morning, we'd be eating spaghetti at the VFW because that was really our dinner. And I certainly wasn't going to put my faith in God because I didn't trust him any longer. Thanks, but no thanks, God. I'll do this on my own. I don't need your help. That thought stayed with me for a very long time. And during that time, I medicated to numb the feelings. That's what you do when you have trauma and you don't take care of it and you have nobody to talk to. You can't go through it yourself. And even though this could have happened maybe 30 years ago, it's still fresh in my mind, but I have a new outlook because Jesus is my Lord and he's master over my life. And I've had to take care of it through the years. And I'll tell you how I did it. So I turned to drugs instead of God. And since I worked in a hospital, you know, they were available. My addiction got progressively worse. One day I'm running in the flight line. I'm running around and all of a sudden I noticed this car next to me. And here were the two guys trying to keep pace with me. And the faster I ran, the faster they would go. And I just kept running as fast as I could until I couldn't do it anymore. And I collapsed and went down. The ambulance came, picked me up. And I ended up in the hospital because they had to put an IV in me. Then that got infected. Then they went to put antibiotics in and that punctured my lung. And it was just a big mess. But the higher ups, they always came to visit me. And so this one night, I had told, you know, one of the senior master sergeants said, what can I do for you? Is there anything I can do? And I said, yes, I want to go overseas. I just wanted to forget everything, go over there and start new. But you know, that's not really what happens. And so the senior master sergeant, he called me up one night and he said, Naomi, I got your orders. And then I said, really, where am I going? And he said, you're going to go overseas, but just stop by on your way home and I'm going to let you read them yourself. And so sure enough, I stopped by because that was all what was in my mind. And I get there and he puts a glass of iced tea on the table and he got on top of me. Somebody else who wanted to, I guess it was, I can say it was Satan trying to take my life. And I said to him, what is your wife going to say? That's all I could think of. And he jumped up and I ran out the door. Went to my boss, told him what happened. Went to kept going up the chain of command. And finally, the head nurse called me up. And she said, I went up to her office and she says, you know, he's going to retire in 2 weeks. And I said, he should have thought of that, about that. But instead, she says, well, you know, it's probably going to look bad for you. You know, were you flirting with him? I said, no, I wasn't flirting. Well, what were you doing at his house? Of course it all looked bad. And they were all going to make me look bad. And I knew if I lost the trial, my name would be mud in that hospital. If you even thought the wrong thing in the ER, they knew what it was up in the fifth floor. And so I said, okay. Then I realized that's really what happens when things happen and women go to report it. They're always going to be negative. You know, they're always going to make you look bad. So I left it. And then one night I was sent overseas in England for 3 years. And guess what I was in charge of? The pharmacy. So then my addiction just grew progressively. And I, after my 3 years was up, came home and I got to choose California because that base in England was closing. And so you get your choice. Went to California and I was in a doctor's house because the doctors would call on the single people and say, could you watch our house? We're going away for 2 weeks and you can stay and have everything. And so I was there. And one night I had used, woke up in the middle of the night, and I still had the syringe in my arm. I had the tourniquet. My arm was black and blue because there was no circulation. I undid the tourniquet. I pulled out the syringe. And normally when people come in and their arm is black like that from a tourniquet, we ended up amputating their arm. And so as soon as I pulled it off, the blood came back into my arm and my arm came out naturally. And so I got up out of bed. I went into the mirror. I mean, in the bathroom, and I was putting cold water on my face. And when you look in the mirror, really test yourself. You're looking at your face and your pimples and your blotches, but you ever look inside of your eyes? I looked in my pupils and I had a Kodak moment. You know how when somebody is in a drama show on stage and you see the spotlight and then there's a round circle around them and they're in the middle singing and whatever. I looked in my eyes and I looked down and there was this deep, dark pit. And I was laying in it. I was laying in a fetal position. I had all these dirty blotches all over. Well, Dale, you wake up. Wake up. Okay. I had all these dirty blotches. And I knew that I saw then that I really hit rock bottom. And when you're hitting rock bottom, the only place you can look up is, oh, God, help me. And so I look in. And you know the cranes, they have a long arm and then they have a claw and that digs in the dirt. I saw Jesus's hand came down and he gently curled his fingers and he pulled me up. And of course, when I was looking, I was very small. I fit into his hand and he took me to his breast. I said, oh God, I'm so sorry. I hit rock bottom. And at that, the words came across exactly what Corey Ten Boom said. She said, there isn't a pit so deep that God isn't deeper still. Say that with me. I'm just going to repeat this. There isn't a pit so deep that God isn't deeper still. I remember she said that. Betsy said that to Corey. Corey said, I'm going to die in this hellhole. Remember in the Holocaust, and they were in there with their bunk beds. It was so dirty and they were treated so bad. But that's what she told Corey, because Corey was losing faith. After I saw that, God rescued me in that moment. He could have turned his back on me. He could have walked away. But here I was. He rescued me. And he promised me this. And I never heard it again until I came here. I love you with an everlasting love. I will never leave you nor forsake you. He promised me that after I turned my back on him. So what hope that gave me, that kind of catapulted me into, I need help. I need help. And I think it was around then that I asked Jesus into my heart. I know that he is in my heart. I asked him to come in. I looked for a Christian counselor, because secular ones, really, I went to one and it was so much hogwash. And I looked for a Christian counselor. I couldn't do it on base because remember I was in the service. So I went an hour off. Her name was Gail and I'll never forget her. She gave me so much grace as she tried to help me and we tried to cover different issues. I'd go home and use to comfort me. That was my comfort food. My other drug of choice was ice cream, Häagen-Dazs. And I would eat the whole ice cream and it would feel so comforting. Everything was washed away and I'm eating this. And then after I got done, I'd go, oh my gosh, how much does that weigh? So I'd make myself throw up until it was even with the cup. And that's what happens. You go from one addiction to another addiction. So my counselor had these wide boundaries, and little by little, she moved them in. But she gave me grace when I didn't think I deserved it. And she had these rules. One, I was to go to church. Am I too loud or am I okay? She had rules. You need to go to church once a month. You need to go to a Christian 12-step program. And you need to keep your appointments with me as a counselor. And you need to find a sponsor. So I worked on each one. I went to church once and it was really nice. During the worship, it was just beautiful. Tonight, Pastor Barbara, every word that was sung in this worship service, I could have used that whole thing as my testimony. You can't do anything without Jesus, okay? Anyway, I went to church and church is kind of like, I have to compare, like when we have altar calls, every time you come up, you may think, nothing happened to me. And you'll go home and maybe in a week or two, the choice you used to make, all of a sudden you're not making that choice. Or what you used to do, all of a sudden you're not interested. Or when you'd rush out for your friends, I'm not interested in going out with them right now. God heals you every time you come up to the altar. For every call that Pastor Barb or Brett or Brother Chris gives, there's something that God is healing you with. And it's like an onion. You take one peel, one layer. Next time you come up, he peels another layer until you get to the root. That's the problem that you have to solve. So I went to church, and I'll tell you my hang up. Pastor Barbara always tells sometimes what her fault is. Mine is when I come up to the altar, if and I'm working on this, if my feet are wiggling a little bit, is that the Holy Spirit or is that my age? I can't keep my balance. Then I go down. Was that the Holy Spirit or was that me? And then I'm laying there and I'm going, well, I don't feel anything. I'll just get up. But really, God is healing me. And that's just my hang up. If it's not yours, don't get your panties. What is it? Don't get your panties in a wad. If it doesn't apply to you, it doesn't apply to you. But I bet there's one or two people in here who feel that way. But I just want you to know that every time you come up, God is healing you. I believe that God can heal miraculously. I've seen a heroin addict, so much heroin in him. He was so addicted. And someone prayed for him, and the next day he had no withdrawal. I believe that God can heal you in increments, in percentage. You come up one time, and then you come up another time, and each time he's going to heal you, okay? Other times, I believe that he can even allow you to go to prison, if that's what his timing is, because that will isolate them from their friends, isolate them from their drugs. They'll be in their cell. They have a Bible to read. And maybe when they first get there and they're all mad and all upset because they're there, the Bible doesn't make sense. But eventually God gives them discernment to understand what they're reading. And eventually what they're reading goes from their head to their heart. And so sometimes, you know, it's all up to his timing. When my mom was dying, she was on her bed and she was moaning, but it was her last stage. And my sister's going, go to the light. My other sister's going, Dad's waiting for you. And I just took her hand and I bowed my head and I prayed to myself and I said, God, why is it taking you so long to take her home? And I heard his voice as if he was sitting right next to me. He said, and he said it in a loving way, not a chastisement. He said, daughter, I will take her in my timing when I'm ready. I said, Lord, I hand her to you right now. And in the spiritual realm, I lifted her up. In 5 minutes, she's sitting there and she goes, oh, had this smile on her face and her head went down as she took her last breath. And I believe that's when her personal angel or Jesus held his hand out and said, come on, I'm going to escort you to heaven. So it's always in his timing, not ours. You know, sometimes we want an answer just like that, but, you know, maybe he has a reason why he's not answering us. While I was there, I went to the Christian 12 step. We have Christian 12 steps and we have secular 12 steps. And in the secular ones is a higher power. We believe in a higher power. And one night I went to that and the guy goes, my higher power is the doorknob. Because when you turn it, and the door opens, you see the universe and you get all these positive vibes in your life. I thought, oh boy, let's see how that works. And I even said to him, I said, so is that working for you? And of course he said, not really. But in the 12th step, we'd meet in the sanctuary. There'd be a group for adult children of alcoholics. There'd be a group for drug and alcohol. There'd be a group for men and sexual issues with pornography. And then there'd be a group for the children of all the people who were dysfunctional here. And so, and then after we went to our groups, then we came back to the sanctuary, and there was always somebody there that you could go and pray. And this one night, the kids all came out, and they were filled with the Spirit, and they were laying their hands on people. And I'll tell you, it was the most exciting thing. And I see that for this church. I see that the children are going to take over soon. God's going to release them to be filled with the anointing, and they're going to start praying for people. Then I went to counseling, and she did a very good job with me. And I went to a sponsor. I found a sponsor. I found one for overeaters, and I found one for drug and alcohol. And so the one, the requirements are you have to have the same addiction problem. You have to have been clean for several years. It can't be a family member. It can't be a friend. But it's somebody I would call up, and that you make an appointment with this person. And I never met the person, and I was with her for a year. But it's every night. Not in the beginning, it was every night, and then it was once a week, and then it was once every 2 weeks. But your time, my time was from 7 to 8. And then another night, it was like 8 to 9. And so I would talk to one, then I would talk to the other. And they always prayed with me afterwards, which you don't usually find. But you go by the Christian 12-step book, and it's whoever's the sponsor, it's their responsibility to study up for that week, so that as you're talking to them, they don't really know that you're working in a workbook, but they know that, you know, after they're done, then they get questions that they have to answer for the next week. And it deals deep inside. It goes down to all the issues of why you're doing something with addiction. Then eventually my counselor said I really needed to go into a rehab. So she helped me find a Christian rehab, St. Helena in Napa Valley in California. And I went there, and you would have certain classes, and you had two groups, and they all had their own psychologists, psychiatrists, nurses, counselors. So that's who you were assigned to. And this one day we had a class for everybody, and the guy gave us a paper and told us to rip it up in 4 pieces. And on one piece, we had to write our drug of choice. And on the others, what were our priorities? And so, of course, you know, you had to line them up, and people were going around the room, and everybody had a turn. And when it came to me, God, it was a Kodak moment. God cleared my mind. And for the first time during that whole time of addiction, I realized it was like the spotlight came down, and I realized I put my drug of choice before God. I had my drug of choice, God, job, family, and I just cried and cried. I remember I went into the bathroom. I knelt over the toilet. I said, oh, God, forgive me. And I realized he died for me. He had nails in his hand. He was on the cross. He died for me, and look at what I did to him. I chose drugs over him. That was the day that really catapulted me. I went back to the counselor after rehab, and that's after all those years, that's when we went over forgiveness. That when you harbor something inside of you, it blocks your relationship with the Lord. And, you know, it was another Kodak moment. My counselor had me go back in time when I was raped, and she said, his hand is on your shoulder, and he's reaching out, and he told them to put the knives in his hand. And when he pulled his hand back, I saw the nail pierced hand. That's when it became very real to me. I became clean. I moved on. I went to a college, Bethany Bible College. I got a bachelor's in psychology, and my major was in addiction studies. I went to a church service one night, and they were having a conference. And this evangelist, he's talking, and he says, I want you to give all your money, and this is a test of faith. Do you believe in God? Do you believe he's going to take care of you? And so he said, I want you to give all your money to the church. And at first you're thinking, oh my gosh, is this a scam? But I said, okay. And so I gave everything but $100 just in case, you know, there was an emergency. And I went back the next night and he said, you know what? I was sitting out on the patio today praying, and God told me that some people didn't give all of their savings account or whatever account you took it from. He said, if you really trust the Lord, you're going to empty that account. So I gave him $100 and I left $5 just to keep my account open. And that night he gave me a prophecy. He didn't know who I was. He didn't know anything about me. Put his hand on my shoulder and he said, daughter, you have been obedient to me. You have shown me that you do trust me. He said, I'm going to take care of you. And he said, I'm going to give you unexpected inheritance. I'm going to give you unexpected checks. He laid a mantle of finance over me. He said, every bill is going to be paid. You will not need again. So the next time we had another church service, and this guy was a Jew. Him and his wife were Jewish. And he was talking about some feast. And he on the side of the church inside was a white tent. And he said, in this feast, you know, you choose someone to go through the tent, someone who's dear to you, and you're both going to take communion and you're going to give your vows to Jesus. And so I took my communion and I said, I'll go where you want me to go. I'll do what you want me to do. I'll say what you want me to say. And I never, ever said that before because I was afraid he was going to send me to Africa. I saw myself wearing this little grass skirt and living in a little hut. But this time, I really meant it. So my dad had passed away. My mom was really having a hard time, you know, living by herself and eating by herself. We got her puppy, but she still missed my dad, and she had asked me, you know, do you want to come home? I'm in the Air Force 20 years, and now I'm going to go live with my mother. I said, Mom, look, how about if I pray about it? She says, okay. So I prayed, and I said, Lord, if you want me to go home, I want to be able to see in my mother's house. I want to know when she's home and not home. I want to be able to take care of her. Because I knew that this was the most impossible prayer. There were people who were living in all the houses around. 4 months later, she calls me back and she says, Naomi, the man on the corner house passed away. And his sisters knew that I took care of Joe. And so they offered the house to me for $45,000. She had told me if it goes for $75,000 or below, I'm going to buy it. And if not, I'll let it go. So she said she bought it for $45,000. So July 4th, went home and my family met me and we painted and did the carpet and everything. Everything was empty. And they said, okay, we're going to go home. So home was a little cobblestones over to my mother's house. And right through the fence. And I'm sitting in the house by myself and I'm going, okay, so this is where you want me to live? This is beautiful. It's a big house. It's a corner house. It's got a big garden, a big lot. And I said, wait a minute. And I went and looked out the back door, and I could see right into my mother's living room. Isn't that a God thing? I knew then I'm going home. I'm going to live next door to my mother. When I got there, for 3 years in a row, my mom's financial advisor said, Helen, you should start giving your daughters inheritance and you won't have to pay on it. So for 3 years in a row, me and two sisters, we each got $10,000. So in 3 years, I had $30,000, and that's what I bought my little blue car with. Every bill is paid for. I have no need for anything. Anything I want, that's all it is I want. I'm not bragging, but I want to tell you, when I gave my life over to Christ and I'd learned to trust Him, He's given me favor ever since. Then someone told me about the lighthouse and deliverance. I had never seen a deliverance except exorcisms, and they were all like, what's a girl who threw up pea soup? And just, you know, all the bad ones. And so I had no idea. But I was wet. I was met with Nancy and Brett, the deliverance team. I had Brother Chris. Brother Brett. I just keep saying Brett and brother, but you're both brothers. Okay. They helped in the deliverance, and eventually I helped in the deliverance. And when I say we looked in their pupils, when we would look in their pupils, we could see the demons inside. But I went there, and I probably have gone about 10 times since I started. Everybody needs a deliverance. Really, you have no idea what's inside of you, what you've picked up. Once you left the last time, who knows where you're at now. And the most important thing to me, when I came to this church, I learned to trust Pastor Barbara. I have been hurt a lot by friends. I've been hurt by the church. And I was never really going to come into a church. Thank you. But when I came here, I learned to trust her. I learned to trust Nancy Connell. They've become very, very good friends. And I'm going to make friends with others. You just have to give me a chance. Okay. What did I learn in all of my life? I know that I've recovered from my drug addiction. I have recovered to be the person God intended me to be. That's what recovery is all about. To be the person God intended me to be. Easter Day, I said 2019, Pastor Barbara ordained me as a minister. God has anointed me with gift of healing. And the most important, He's learned me how to love the unlovable. I'm going to have an altar call. I'm going to have two. I told you my addiction was drugs, bulimia. I also had a gambling problem. I gambled a lot overseas. They just have gambling all the time. But what is your addiction? I'm going to name a few. And if you don't fit in this, don't get your panties twisted or I forget it again. In a wad, there's drugs and alcohol, gambling. You can do that online. in your house privately, and nobody will know about it, but you can go to the casino. But what's the consequence? Do you know how many people are living on the street and they've had a mansion and they've gambled it away and their family has left them? They have no car, no house. They have nothing. And they were very successful and they have no job. Shopping. Anybody look at hoarders? I look at hoarders on television because I'm always learning something. But it shows you how people have they stack up all their items, and then they have a pile of unopened boxes from Amazon. And every day they're going to buy the bargain of the day because they have to have it, but they never open it. Overeating. You could be stressed out, and that's the first thing you turn to is food. Video games. How many just can't turn away from a video game? Some people can't get out of bed because of psychic readings, horoscopes, tarot cards. People play those things. People depend on those people to tell you what your life is going to be like. Nobody can tell you what your life is like except Jesus Christ. Pornography. Bulimia. Parents of teens, many have gone to put their laundry away in their kids' closet, and there's bottles of vomit because they eat with the family. Everybody looks at them being healthy, and then next thing you know, they got to go upstairs and quick get rid of it because of their self-image. Binging, maybe there were 6 cupcakes on the table. And they take them upstairs and they eat and there's such comfort. But now they got to get rid of it. So they're throwing up. One good sign I know for sure is if your toilet gets clogged a lot. When I was in the Air Force, the toilets got clogged. And then I realized, you know, when I would throw up, the chunks would get stuck. Pedophile. Why can't they stop? Because they're addicted to it. Smoking. If you can't stop doing something, then it's an addiction or it's a compulsive behavior. If you can't stop to spend time with the Lord, then it's an addiction and a compulsive behavior. Every word in those songs tonight definitely applied to everything I've said. You can't make it in this world unless you have Jesus Christ. When you put your addictions and your drug of choice could be shopping or whatever. When you put that first, you're not even giving God a chance to help you in your life. So tonight I'm going to ask, the first altar call is for anybody who has any kind of addiction. It doesn't matter. If you want to tell me, fine. If not, you don't have to tell me one thing. And I'm just going to pray for you. And the second one is for anybody who's been raped or abused or molested. Maybe nobody knows about it and you've kept it a secret all this time. I want to pray for you. I know what the trauma's like. So if you have any problems with addiction, it doesn't matter what it is, you can come up. And God already told me, no judgment in this house tonight. No one is to judge whoever comes up here.